said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flower State of Fear. Brian, how are you? I see you making some faces back from WrestleMania.
I'm a mad dog.
Yeah, that movie, we'll get into it. But yeah, it's a mad dog. That St. Bernard, we're talking Cujo today. But before we get into it.
What if Beethoven, but not nice?
Kind of. Yeah. Beethoven was like late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I don't know if the timeline fits if this dog actor could have been Beethoven. I didn't look it up.
You know who I also thought maybe the dog actors for? They're like used four dogs and a couple animatronics.
There was a couple shots where I was getting that Sandlot vibe, like when the
Sandlot.
When the dog like catches the ball and it's like clearly a big fake head. There's a couple of times where people are tussling with Cujo in this movie, and they do a good job of shooting it close enough that it's not real bad. It's pretty good.
No, it's pretty good.
But there were definitely just a few shots where I was like, "Ooh, Sandlot is
definitely not the Beethoven dog," because it's about a decade later.
But no,
I also for Brendan, I was like, "Is it the Sandlot dog too?" Even though it's not quite the same type of dog. Same slobber. It looked good. It was pretty affordable, and usually when things are affordable, I just get the Blu-ray. Oh, I got that like with that fancy that fancy brand, Kino Lorber.
Which one is it? Oh, I don't
know. Kino Lorber.
Oh no, I'm not as familiar with them.
Way I recognize them. Yeah, they're becoming, I think, bigger, like an Arrow kind of.
Okay. Place. Okay.
Oh, the disc is in there. What they're known for is like the spine is, they all have that same font.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
But
if you had them all on your shelf, they would look very uniform.
Yeah, the KL with the, like, I have this and like CB4 was a Kino release. Like, so anyway, the Kino Lorber thing looked good.
Yeah, I just was watching on an old DVD.
Yeah.
Take it to the streets. Artisan video, baby.
Hey, those artisan videos were top tier.
Oh, you got to give them credit. Those dudes got in on the ground floor. They must have had a license to print like so much stuff. Because I have so many artisan DVDs.
Artisan
like.
And Dimension.
Yeah, yeah, they had like, a lot.
Head of
the game. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. We are getting ahead of intro the show. We didn't even start our.
Or banter.
I did it. My pitch perfect impression of a dog got us off on a tangent.
Are you dog is relentless. Are you have you watched any like a thing in genre or horror in the last
My due diligence and looked this up, so I do have a couple on hand to talk about. I watched two. One was from 2006. It's more of a little bit more of a thriller than I would say straight horror, but it's called Robin Williams and Toni Collette. It was called The Night Listener. It was okay. It was all right. Not, you know, late stage Robin Williams, about that level. You know how it was when he was, you know, I mean, God bless him, the man made a million classics, but like near to the end of his career, he was not doing his best work. But him and Toni Collette are always good. The material.
No, I'd want to watch that. I never heard of that. I'd like
it. It kind of had an early, I don't know, it was like one of those, like, he's investigating this. He hears about this kid who he like bonds with about over this tragic story, but then he starts to kind of doubt the kid and his mom, and you know, and then he's investigating that. And also dealing with some personal things. It was good. I guess I should. I mean, it was okay, but he was good, and so was Toni Collette. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched one. This was interesting. I don't know what put me onto it. It's called Night Watch. It's from 1997. I don't know what put me back onto it, I should say, because I have to think that the preview was on maybe my original VHS of Scream. Mm-hmm. Because I have seen the trailer for this movie like a billion times. It stars Ewan McGregor. He takes a job as like a night watchman because he's finishing up law school and creepy it's good stuff.
Great cast.
Yeah, yeah. Josh Brolin, Nick Nolte, Josh Arquette, Nick Nolte,
Laura Graham.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it also had like some side characters that were all. Oh, Brad Dourif was in it. And it's like I said, I saw this trailer like 1,000 times, and it's like it was like a thrillery, suspense, mystery. There's like a serial killer, and somebody might be messing with Ewan McGregor, and you know he's got Josh Brolin's like his crazy friend, and you know.
So you've been hitting the thrillers.
Yeah, like I said, the closest thing to like straight up horror I've been watching has been more like thriller related.
Yeah,
Although Night Watch is kind of also a serial killer movie.
Okay. So. Okay. I fell into more of our old comfort classics of I was working, needed some background noise. YouTube TV only, you know, not YouTube TV, sorry, just YouTube only offers a few free things of like that are worth. So original Child Play was popped on, just always a banger. Nothing needs to be said about it. But because of that, then I did a rewatch of the first half of that season 3 of Chucky, just because I was like, all right, it's on. Yeah. Just like that show.
I know I think the night we're recording here is the first part, night for part 2. And I'll probably just let that build up, but I would love to kind of watch, because it was only a 4-episode first half.
Four or five, something like that.
Yeah, it's like a quick catch. I could catch up on it pretty quick.
Yeah, the show's just fun. You gotta build into it. It's kind of void itself of like harsh criticism in the sense of like after that first season, especially, it's just so ridiculous that
you're either bought in or you're not.
Exactly.
And you can't really like analyze it from an outsider perspective.
No, I think season one has that, like, we got to sell a Chucky show. And then just like everything else, Don Mancini's done. It's like, well, once I sold it and I got a little good graces, I was like, can I do this? Can I do this? Yeah.
Can we spin this out even further?
So I'm enjoying it, but that was really it. Nothing much. And Cujo.
They don't skimp on the horror on that show, to be fair.
Oh no,
it's very fun and silly, but it does go like hard on the gore and horror.
Whatever they worked out with like sci-fi to like essentially have a pay-per-view type network show.
Yeah.
They got it going on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're doing good work over there. Bless them.
But that's about it. Oldie but goodie was more of a
That's perfect.
But
I did want to say before we get started talking about Cujo, I know we don't really do horror origin when it's just you and me because we've already talked about all that stuff.
But please,
but I did have just a tiny little one about Cujo, and it's just when I was a freshman in high school. I don't know how it worked in New Jersey, but you know, here you take your, like, you have your eighth grade proficiencies or whatever.
Yeah, we had, like,
eighth grade is like the first time you take them, but you basically have a chance to pass. You just have to pass them by the end of high school, kind of.
I don't think we had any.
Yeah, we had. It was like state testing like that.
Okay.
But once you passed them, you never had to take them again. So a lot of times that meant when they did testing, I didn't have to go to school. But when I was a freshman and I wasn't driving yet and both my parents worked, I didn't have a choice. So I had to go into school and I just had to go to the library. And Cujo and Carrie were the only two Stephen King books they carried in the high school library. So I read both of those. And then alternatively, these like kind of all go together because the other things I looked at were like old books about old horror movies. That's where I learned about like the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and some of that older stuff was from that. So all in, wrapped up in that one kind of like week, I like burned through, like, I really like got my horror bona fides.
You're like, wow, I'm into some stuff.
Yeah, hey, like, I might be, like, looking back, it seems very formative. At the time, it didn't.
Oh, it's just something to read.
Yeah. So that being said, I don't want to give the impression that I remember the book Cujo very much. I do remember that there's a little bit of interesting stuff they do with, like, writing from Cujo's perspective, kind of.
Really?
Like, not so much, like, Cujo thinking, but, like, in the third person talking about Cujo, like... But, like, only really focusing on him. Like,
it's hysterical. Like,
explaining
that movie,
his, like, mentality, kind of, you know?
It's well-regarded, this and that, and, like, Stephen King's, it's one of the ones of, like, the book. Like, yeah, I don't remember writing it. I was so deep into my alcoholism.
I was going to say, is this the one that his wife pulled out of the trash, or was that Carrie? One of them,
did not read the trash thing for Cujo today, but that would maybe be Carrie. But yeah, reading that is like, yeah, I didn't know. So like when you hear those things of like him and his alcoholism, and there's always every book, there's always every movie book adaptations, always these stories of like, you know, oh, but this one part of the book where it's like this Cujo from his perspective or things in it. And it's like, yeah, that sounds like a man who is just like, yeah, sure. It's crazy. Yeah.
A man with a creative mind, but who is like untethered.
Yes. I always remembered this story from. So we had the book floating around my house.
Well, it was like one of his really big, her first really big hits. It was like a huge big book. So but I think I don't, maybe we had a copy at my house too.
I don't think anyone read it in my. It was one of those weird ones where like early when he was like a middle.
Did your
school,
family have a copy of Helter Skelter too?
No.
So many people I know had their parents had Helter Skelter.
Maybe. I don't.
You know, books from the 70s that were popular.
Yeah. No, my parent, like, I think it was my brother's. Like, he was in like a middle school or something like that. And he's not in horror movies like us, but at the time, it was like some scary movies. And it was, you know, early on, like Stephen King's very, I think, formidable for, like, parents of that age, especially, were like, watch The Shining. Like, oh, my kids.
Well, you gotta imagine, this is probably the era that the It TV series has, like, just been on in the last year or two.
Give it a few years of that. So I remember, I think, like, Steve bought the book, probably didn't read it, and it would float around. And then because of that, I'd be like, oh, it was, like this scary dog. I never got to see it. That was, like, a lot of, you know, that mythos of the Stephen Kings. So that was really mine. And then, famously, it's... referenced in an episode of Friends of like Rachel being scared of Cujo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Actually, one of the best the Letterboxd reviews, top reviews, was that Rachel Green's full of shit. This isn't scary at all.
So this was your first time actually watching.
This is the first time actually watching Cujo. I think all of my knowledge, other than what I just said, has always come from three or two places. I love the 80s. VH1 series. I remember Highlight of Cujo probably witty banter from like Michael Ian Black or something.
Some talking heads got in there and chatted it up about it.
And it being highlighted on the like Bravo's 101 scary movie moments or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which I think it was like in the top 80s or something. I saw it today. That. Yeah,
I love to talk about what I think the scariest movie moment in this movie to me. It comes very near the end, and it is in the climax, but it might not be what everybody thinks of. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, we can talk about that later.
So let's go through it. Let me pull our usual thing because I am ill prepared.
Before we get into the plot, I wanted to say this movie had a little title sequence. The blood swirl at the beginning reminded me of Child's Play 3. You know, when like the blood swirl and it becomes the eye of the new Chucky doll and stuff. I was like,
I love that. That Child's Play 3's intro. Oh, wow. This is a whole paragraph. They're probably going to do the whole movie.
Yeah.
In this tale of a killer canine, man's best friend turns into his worst enemy. When sweet St. Bernard Cujo is bitten by a bat, he starts behaving oddly and becomes very aggressive. As Cujo morphs into a dangerous beast, he goes on a rampage in a small town. Stay at home, mom.
Not really a small town. More
it's
like,
more of just like one ranch.
He's really around one house. Yeah, and he goes like to the neighbor.
stay-at-home mom, Donna, gets caught in Cujo's crosshairs.
She should have stayed at home, you know what I'm saying?
With her son, Tad, stuck in their tiny car. Donna and Tad have a frightening showdown with the crazed animal. I mean, yeah, that's Cujo.
Yeah, that's the movie. They don't give away everything. They don't talk about Steve, the
whole
town stud.
The whole like, yes, the movie. I mean, it very much starts right. Like it starts sweet with the
right,
dog
it's got that
running.
Idea. Like it's like you're watching a Disney movie. It's like it's got that like Homeward Bound ending. It's like a rabbit bouncing through
he's
the grass and light music, kind of tweet tweet. You know, you know, it's really it does have kind of sweetness to it.
And you know. The rabbit runs in a cave kind of esque and these cartoonishy looking bats, which probably how bats look, just get in there and really bite in on him, and then he's
yeah, they bit the shit out of that dog. I hope a real
bad,
dog didn't have to get bit by those bats. They were really biting the hell out of that. That was clearly a prop nose, I think.
Yeah, that was probably some puppetry there.
I hope, but those were real bats attacking a puppet, though, for sure.
Definitely, it's what was it? It wasn't in Vampire's Kiss and Nick Cage's like craziness. Like he was apparently famous to like get a real bat to bite me, you know. And they were like, you know, to have me fight, and they were like, no, we can't do that. He's like, why? And they're like, because you can't.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to be told no.
Yeah, and but it's the irony of watching this right now. There's a woman I work with. Who her dogs are fine to my knowledge and everything. They're on medication. But last 2 days, I'm like, oh, she's like, I'm working from home, this and that. Her dogs ate like a rabbit. So starting this, you know, and then they got sick from it. But like watching this intro, I'm like, glad thing I didn't make a Cujo joke while I heard.
Yeah.
She was like, my dog ate a rabbit. Because I definitely would have if that was in the old noggin.
If I'd have had that one in my back pocket, I'd have hit that hand. I'd got to hammer that nail. But no, Cujo's just having a sweet old good time, and he chases a rabbit down a hole, gets his head stuck like old Winnie the Pooh.
Sorry, Winnie the Pooh.
He's got his head stuck in there, and some bats bite the fucking shit out of him.
And, yeah, he runs his way, and they really just build him, like, on the Cujo end, just him growling a lot for the whole
first half. I like the way, first of all, this establishes Cujo's sick from minute one. So, like, you never see Cujo, you're never with normal Cujo.
No.
So you only see him slowly deteriorating.
Even when, a little later, he's, like, when they're in the kitchen, and, like, him, he's a sweetheart. He wouldn't have him protect my life. Wouldn't hurt a fly. And like, but then he doesn't do anything, but he gives a growl to that, the neighbor or whatever.
Like they do a good job of making you sympathetic. Like he's obviously getting irritated, you know, through this first half of the movie, he's irritated by like loud noises. He obviously doesn't feel good. So I think they do a pretty good job as much as you can with an animal of like, making you sympathize and empathize with him, you know, understanding that he's not at fault. He's basically turning into a monster. He's Reagan. He's an innocent who's corrupted. Like
the amount of times though in Cujo, I audibly said with no one around, get his ass, Cujo. Just whoever.
Oh, well, that's because, and I know we don't need to jump ahead too much, but like at least the first two people Cujo kills, you're like, he's doing us a service. Yeah. It's a solid.
Just get their ass, Cujo. Like
get their ass. Get his ass, Cujo.
Like you're doing right. Mm-hmm.
Cleaning up the streets.
But the juxtaposition of all this going on is we're learning about Dee Wallace and her family, and she's...
classic Stephen King family where everybody hates each other,
and where the non problematic protagonist or male figure looks just like Stephen King.
Yeah. I mean, well, Stephen King was never this handsome, but
no. I meant like the beard and the glass. Like he's dressed like I should say not looks like. dressed to be like Stephen King. Like, there's a few movies where there's a guy with glasses and a beard and has that New England kind of Stephen King look going on.
Yeah.
No, Stephen King's not a handsome man. Never was. Also, his opinions on Twitter mean shit, because he's like, Night Swim, critics got it wrong, but it's really good.
That dude will promote anything.
He'll promote anything. Scariest
He was one of the ones they paid to say The Flash was good, too, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, he'll take a buck. He doesn't give a shit.
Scariest movie I've ever seen. It's really good and powerful. I cheered. Anyway. But he could write.
I was going to say, Dee Wallace, we already kind of touched on, but, like, just... She has to carry the load in this one, but my God, like, what an icon, right? Like, we can't ever say enough about how great Dee Wallace is and how many great performances and how many great movies. Like, what a career.
She should also just be, like, she should be sitting in the same breath as other Scream queens.
Absolutely.
Because she doesn't, and then you, like, you know, I'm looking at her discography or filmography right now, though, and it's like, it's so much horror and it's so much B horror.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, E.T.'s not horror, but like, you know,
but it is genre. Like, she did genre stuff.
Let me just name a few that are standing out to me. Stepford Wives, first role. Hills Have Eyes. The Howling.
Howling, yep.
Cool, Cujo. Critters, Popcorn, The Frighteners.
That's kind of like the first thing I remember Dee Wallace from, and I worked backwards.
Yeah,
I know obviously I had seen E.T. before I saw The Frighteners, but like I didn't make that connection. You know, like
you're not
the bomb because I saw E.T. when I was a kid. You know,
Like in E.T. and this is something later. I think I picked it up from like on Spool. It's like I like that the mom is a Coors Banquet drinker or whatever the beer. What kind of beer is he drinking in E.T.? It's like famously. It's just such like a at the time like. I think it's Coors Banquets, if I'm not mistaken.
It might, yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah.
It's just such like a blue collar thing of this single mother, just like that's what she has in the fridge. Badass.
Hell yeah.
Because
not to get into a thing, but it's like that's coded. She's a working man. Like, you know what I mean? Well, she's the breadwinner. Yeah. She's the man of the house. You know,
I like those. Well, we're talking about Dee Wallace though. From what I read today is like Stephen King also apparently has said too, and they're like, oh, what's your favorite performance in any movie? Who's the best actor in any movie you've ever seen or yours? And it's not Kathy Bates in Misery, which I think would be everyone's number one. Or he goes, no, it's Dee Wallace. It's Dee Wallace and Cujo. And I think if I were to tune into this movie again, that would be why to watch that performance.
Yeah, absolutely. You could pretty much jump to the like third act. You know, yeah, I mean, I love spoilers. I do love Cujo a lot, but like if you were just, it's a very much a cable movie where you could come in halfway through and be like, oh, I can just catch the end of this.
I think some of it is like TNT or USA in the day. Like this is one absolutely. They would run. Yeah, the early movie of her life and her drama, it's like she's having this affair with like the stud of the town and her husband's just, you know.
Her husband, nothing wrong with him.
Nothing wrong with him.
She's just bored. You know, bored. It's just that she's bored. And
it's very 80s too, the way he set it up in its storytelling. It's like, like we're building to something, but it's not big. And her husband's also this big... is an advertising, I guess, writer or executive.
Yeah, he has like an ad company, and they just sold a big. They have a big account coming out, and then like some shit goes wrong with that.
It's being sued. Like there's some cereal that now there's like a lawsuit, and
well, they had to recall a bunch of it basically because the dye in the cereal made kids think they were having bloody stools.
Yes,
that's what you. That's what the whole deal is, and they're gonna lose the account. Basically, they pitched this whole like. Professor, advertisement
campaign, edition of the movie.
And they're gonna pull it, and he has to like leave. That's the it's basically just the thing to get him out of the way.
So and, he's like, out of there. All. He's out of there.
But also they're having marital issues, so it like adds to that tension before he leaves. So there's like a disconnect. She feels even more alone because even if he was there, there was this there'd be this disconnect between them.
Right.
Real quick, did you think it was confusing when they cut from him talking to his friend with the beard that they were playing tennis to the guy she was sleeping with also had a beard? I was like, is that the same guy? Like, did she bang his tennis friend?
It was very confusing because she wasn't banging the tennis friend.
No, it wasn't the same guy.
Yeah, okay.
No.
But
I had the same thing. I was like, apparently he's like a handyman they hired to build a table. I think that's the impression you get of how they met, because later he comes back and like drops it off. She also has the worst situation for a cheater, which is where you're doing the right thing, you're trying to break it off, and then she gets caught anyway. Brutal. Yeah. Just brutal. You know?
One more day, she would have been fine.
Yeah.
So it's her ex-boyfriend from high school.
Oh, okay. It's a high school boyfriend. All right, all right.
Steve Kemp.
Well, either way, he definitely, she tries to break it off with him. He starts to get a little weird about it. He's starting to be a little possessive, a little creepy. And then I have that note, too. It's like, why in movies do they always show people being shocked? Oh, the man I was committing adultery with turned out to be a bad person. Oh, no.
Because you find out later, he just, like, wrecked the house for some reason.
Oh, yeah, he comes later and does, like, a full-on fatal attraction at the house where he, like, trashes the whole place and whatever. Yeah.
It's very thrown in there, but also, while this is going on, Cujo's getting a little Cujo-y. You know, at the house, instead of going after the family in the house, he's like, you know what, I'm going to go take care of that alcoholic neighbor next door.
And it's kind of subtle. It's like, there's like a proto Dolores Claiborne situation at the house where like the husband, they never show him being physically abusive, but definitely the way the wife acts, you can tell he is abusive. The wife has won this sum of money. She wants to take it. She buys him something nice so that he'll let her take a trip. Mm-hmm. He's going to use the time when she's gone down a trip to go to Boston and bang some whores. And then also you realize that she's not coming back. This is an escape plan. Like, she's taking you see her packing up photo albums and stuff. You know the score, you know?
And once again, another thing just to have no one ever come back to that house.
Right. They do a good job of this. I have a thing here about the tight scripting of ways they keep people away from us. You have that mailman that initially sends them out there, who has the weird vendetta against the local handyman or the local mechanic. He's like shit talking him like in the driveway, like having this real passive aggressive thing where he's like, oh hey Harry, fuck this guy.
Yeah. It's so no one comes by.
Right, you have him, you know, he was going to go out there, but he doesn't need to make the delivery because they're going to take a special order later. When the husband realizes that he hasn't been able to contact her when he's out of town, he comes back. They kind of start looking for her. But there's the red herring of Steve trashing the house. So that puts them off to think that maybe Steve kidnapped her or something's going on with that. So again, it's a way to like keep anyone from like even thinking about going to the house, even though he knows that the car was having problems and that she was planning on taking it there. There's all these little things in place that keep them away.
Yeah. It's very nice plotting, but like you said, we could really go to like the third act of this movie if you want to watch it. with some nice little setups, but yeah, Cujo gets over and just, you know, fucks up the neighbor.
Well, he has one, I do want to point out, he does have one last moment of kindness when he's like pretty much full monster face here. Like, he gets all snotty, snarly, and gross, and he's got like... and he comes, the kid who's like his owner, comes upon him like out in the misty, you know, morning fog, and Cujo's all growly, but like the kid kind of talks him down, and then Cujo just runs off. And that's like his last moment, is like the last bit of good dog left in Cujo. It's used there, and thank goodness it's used on Save That Kid so he can go kill the gross hoarder creep who lives next door, who the dad invites to go to Boston to bang the hookers with.
Yeah, why don't we bring your pals?
You take your boy, go bang. I did want to shout out to the dad, the guy Cujo's owner, is a X-Files alum, and he's in not only the show but also the first movie. So that's what I know him from, and I'm sure you probably recognize him from Not Another Teen Movie.
That's where he fucking looks familiar.
Yeah,
I was wondering. I knew that guy.
Joe Lautner.
Joe Lautner. Yeah, I completely, like, it was one of those faces, but
him and Dee Walls are really the only people in the movie that I'm, well, and Danny Pintaro, who went on to be on Who's the Boss, obviously.
For you,
that's a little old, that's a bit of an old head reference for Joe.
I know what Who's the Boss is, I want to be clear.
Sure. But you probably didn't, it probably wasn't even
on. No, I never watched it.
Like, yeah, I think it was already done, not even in syndication anymore when you were watching TV.
Yeah, that was not one of the that was not one of the ones that was like, ooh, old show, let's watch.
It was lower tier, you know. Except for Alyssa Milano, of course.
Yeah, I mean Tony Danza.
Oh, Judith Light, honestly, Judith great Lightfoot. Cast, but we can speculate. I don't really know why it didn't get the second life on cable that a lot of other shows from that era got. It was a big deal at the time, but it never was. Maybe it was on Nick at Night or something.
I was just gonna say I don't think it ever was because I think I would have watched it because things like Step by Step and
Growing Pains, Family Ties.
Like I watched, Family Matters, like. I watched them. They were on reruns.
And those would be the contemporaries, you know. Like.
God, what's the one with all the adopt? I'm blanking.
Just the 10 of us?
No, the adopted daughter, kid, girls in the boarding school.
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life. Some Facts of Life in there. Some Different Strokes, like.
I'm not sure what it is because I'm thinking back on all the shows that made it into syndication and they got like tons of airplay that were from that era and it just wasn't one of them. I don't know what it is about Who's the Boss. Somebody owned the rights and didn't want to give them up or what?
Who's the Boss? Let's see. Who's the Boss?
We're going on to Who's the Boss tangent, guys.
Yeah. All right. This is a lot. Never mind. It had 8 seasons. I'll say maybe it never hit that maybe it never hit
that. No, it was definitely on a long time. I remember. It was a big deal.
Yeah, who the fuck knows? But no, I could tell you as clear as day of all the iconic, 70s, 80s, early 90s sitcoms, Who's the Boss was one I just knew about.
Yeah.
Only
in passing.
Yeah, that's okay. But...
So Cujo does his first, he gets his first kill, but he actually kind of doubles up. He goes right from the friend to the dad. There's really like very little air between those two kills.
They don't waste, like we don't waste any time with the two kills. And so it's really broken in two different movies in that sense, right? You have like I think what the description that we read earlier is saying of like, terrorizing a town, meaning two houses.
Yeah.
I don't. Why did balloons just go when I did
this? I saw that. What happened with that?
Did we say a magic word?
I don't know. Is it?
I did this and it went up, so I'm thinking maybe it's a like a hand air signal. Quotes
and maybe make balloons come up. Say the word birthday.
Birthdays. Happy birthday. All right. I think it's like in two movies, right? It's a 90-minute movie, and you have these couple scenes and things of like Cujo terrorizing this town. But then, when Dee Wallace and her kid get there in the car, right? And they're just there to like drop something off. Like
they need the car looked at. The car itself is the problem.
The kid's like, had like some of the early banter with that before everything goes to shit. It is like, have dad buy us a new car. And she's like, that's a great idea. And I'm like, you bitch. You two timing. No.
You should buy him a car and say you're sorry.
Yeah, that was cute. That was cute. But then, the dog just runs out. And
well, the car's loud, and we know that noises have been setting Cujo off. Like noise, so like the
car is very loud.
The car comes in. The car's loud, so that gets his attention, and he. I'll tell you what, man, this car's got some strong windows because that's a big dog, and he's coming through the. I just imagine he was just gonna shatter that glass. Just
he wanted to keep going at it, like
yeah.
Eventually, that. But the heated, I mean, that's like the it's the weird way to talk about it. It's truly just it's like a boxing match almost. It's just that one punch of a car after another, yeah. And the car kind of, you know, starts up again a little bit. She trucks off and she has her famous line of "fuck you, dog." You know, like it's not a
best
big deal.
Acting ever in a Stephen King movie.
Yeah, it's like not a big deal at the moment, right? And then it's like, oh no. The car is dead.
Yeah.
And now, once again, movie has to happen. But then Cujo is just watching this thing.
Oh, I like Cujo. And he mentions the dog. When Cujo's early in the movie, when Cujo's still nice enough to be around, and they come to the house, the kid mentions how smart Cujo is. He's like, Cujo's smart. And so I think that translates because, like, you have her first attempt to get out of the car and, like, get to the house.
Oh, when he's under the hood.
And he's under the car, looking under it. But then by the time she looks into the car, he's come around behind her. Like, that's, I mean, that's hunter behavior right there. That's a smart boy.
He has one goal, and it's to eat this mother and child.
Well, also, I do love that they keep up the tension with the phone ringing, because the phone, every time the phone rings, it sets Cujo off, makes him crazy.
Until a certain point.
He smashes into the side of the car and leaves that huge bloody dent, and he's just, like, ramming into it and biting the handles off. It's awesome.
Oh, when he started going for that, that's one of my favorite visuals of the side of just ripping the handles off then. Because even she was so bald, even like this, it's right before the Get Out kind of scene of when she's like, I gotta pee. And she's like, okay, I'll hold the door open. I'd be like, just go in the back seat. It's fine.
Yeah. Just pee in the back seat. Don't open the door at all.
Although from what I kind of read about it is apparently the initial scene, after the first car attack.
Mm-hmm.
How she calms the kid down. Apparently, like, parent groups and things have, like, commended that scene or that way of talking to the kid, because they were like, that's absolutely realistic and how, like, of an overwhelmed kid and how you,
yeah.
I guess, as a parent, should do in that situation.
Well, we can talk a little bit about Tad. I mean, they establish he's afraid of monsters.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
a big thing.
His dad does a monster like seance poem every night. It reminds me of the corny one in Halloween 6 that the mom does that always annoys me. But he writes it down for Tad, so you can see Tad like holding onto the piece of paper and stuff. But like the pre-established thing makes when Cujo attacks, obviously Tad freaks out because he thinks this monster is now real. This thing I've been afraid of is now real. And it's a good horror trope of, like, you want to protect your kid, but you also have to deal with your kid. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they are, in the way, they are, like, everything to protect them, but they are also a burden at the same time. They're actually hindering you in protecting them. They're making it harder. Like, you're trying to do for them, and they're making it actively harder. And that's the thing that I think is really well used in some horror movies to ratchet tension, and it's realistic. Kids are difficult.
Yeah. Oh, it's the movie is upsetting.
Yeah, oh,
like
very much
it's
so.
It's a not only dealing with the dog stuff, the kid stuff. I mean, a little bit later, you know, we have to watch a kid have a seizure.
Yeah, and like yeah, he's like constantly gasping because he's like an asthmatic and he can't get air, so he's
over.
Like,
and heat stroke, and that finally convinces her, like, all right. Because now it's what do you say? It's been like a day and a half?
Yeah, something like that. I don't think she even tries to get out of the car till the second day.
No, she doesn't try to get out of the car until the second day.
When she gets out of the car, we didn't talk about it. He fucks her up so bad. And I mean, he bites her so many times. And I'm like, at this point, like, the dad's coming home, but I just don't, you know, rabies is a serious deal. Like, if she contracts the virus, that's it. Like, the only cure for rabies. The only way they ever stop rabies is, like, catching it before you actually get the virus. If you get the virus, you die of it.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah.
I thought, like, you go get a shot. If you get bit by something, you get a shot.
You go get those shots because they're, like, super strong antivirals that are meant to stop the virus from taking hold. But if the virus takes hold...
Okay, so if we get bit, like, we're outside and we get bit, mm-hmm. we get to the hospital, we
you can survive as long as you don't actually get the rabies virus.
Mm. So she has the rabies virus. I want to make this...
I mean, it probably seems like she does.
Yeah, well...
You don't necessarily 100% get rabies from being bitten by an animal with rabies. They can't, you can't, you know, that's not like, it's not like a zombie bite where you 100% turn into a zombie if you get bit by a zombie.
But your probability is higher.
She got bit a lot of times.
A lot of blood flowed around.
Really gross and dirty. And I imagine that, like, it's not going to help the infective nature of what was going on with it.
They were rolling around together.
Yeah, they were a lot of tussling. Yeah.
She held him off good, though. She was able to get back in that car eventually.
Yeah, thank goodness. Whew. I love when she's got this big gaping bite on her leg, and Danny Patero's like, oh, and like touches it. She's like, ah!
Don't fucking touch me, kid.
Yeah, she's like, oh, goddammit.
Well, apparently the kid actually bit her finger
when she has to stick her
in when he's having the seizure. And apparently that scream of like, ah, he bit me was like, not acting.
You know, that's legit. Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, and then, yeah, at the same time, this is also a classic Stephen King. You know, the husband has a fever dream of the affair and the dog attack at the same time.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I gotta go. And they're like,
but I love... That's what sets him off. Not the fact that he hasn't been able to... It's not till he's questioned about it that he's like, she hasn't answered the phone in 2 days. That didn't set you off?
No, he's like, I gotta go. And they're like, you know, fairly, they're like, you really gotta, like...
Yeah, his partner's like, hey, our business is kind of on the line here.
He's like, my wife is getting piped by our high school sweetheart. I gotta go.
She's getting dick down.
And she's not calling me back. Which... I would be paranoid too, but he drives home. That place is trashed.
Right. We talk about in the interim, yeah. You know, Steve has trashed Fatal Attraction up the place, cut up all the pillows and shit.
And it's so classic in the Stephen King, because like, then we have to involve new characters of the police who are like, now the detective story about the case.
The main detective is another X-Files guy. Would be remiss not to point out.
Of course.
That he's in season one, he plays Deep Throat, who is like the guy who gives...
he's Deep Throat?
Yeah, he's the X-Files version of Deep
Throat. No, I know the season one.
Season one, yeah, he's Deep Throat.
Yeah, that was the big overarching story.
He's like the main like information source in that first season, then he ends up getting killed, yeah.
Yes. Did not know that. But yeah, classic Steven. We have these cops that we're just throwing them in there at this point for story purposes. Like, huh? Any steps?
Well, because we didn't kill off the mailman, we have to get another body in here. We got to get the body count up. So the cop has to go out to the farm. You know,
sends out a farm. Cop eats it.
Well, they do investigate Steve, and like, because it seems like maybe it's Steve, but like, the cop clears him and is like, nah, I believe him. I don't think he did anything. So then they finally get around to sending the other cop out to the farm. And yeah, I mean, it goes about as you would expect, really. He couldn't get a shot off. Cujo blindsides him. He doesn't get his gun out in time, you know. D-Wallace tries to like distract Cujo and save it, but the guy doesn't really take the opportunity to get his ass up off the ground and like get somewhere. He just kind of lays there, and then like the next time you just notice Cujo in the background just like ravaging dude. I was like,
but Cujo should be like satisfied with the whole body, you know, for a while.
But I don't think he's eating. I think he's just killing.
He's just killing. One track mind.
Because basically, it's just that thing of, like, everything's irritating him, everything makes him angry, so he just attacks every, you know what I mean? Like, so anything that comes
doesn't
around,
take any naps.
It. No naps. He's no naps. We're getting ready for the final confrontation. D. Wallace gets in desperation mode. Tad's asthma. He's like basically, she says I'm watching him die. He's laying here. I'm just going to watch him. He can't breathe. He's over. He's just heat stroke. So she's going to like, there's a bat out there. She's going to try to get to it and fight Cujo. Get to the house. She knows there's a working phone in the house. She's going to get to the house. This is where we have what I consider to be the scariest scene of the movie, the scariest moment of the movie. And it is when she gets out and she's looking around and then Cujo comes out from under the porch. He's between her and the house. She didn't know where he was and she thought she maybe could get to the house while he was wherever he was. And then you realize once she's outside the car that he's right there. He's like right under the porch and he just steps out and stands there. And it's just very scary to me.
No, that's more so what is considered on the lists in this. It's the jump scare of the left of the window, like, you know, on the passenger side, right, where he comes up the second time, I would say. But what you're saying, that's more viscerally scary of, like,
right,
this beast is in your way, you know what he's capable of, and he's just underneath. He's not under the car anymore. He's not in your eye frame.
And the thing is, and maybe you thought you had a chance, you thought you had a shot, but he's right there in your path. Directly where you want to go, and he just comes out, and the way he just comes out with such power and confidence, and is just like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill you, D. Wallace.
And to be fair, like, they all should have died.
In the book, Tad does die.
Oh, I want to bring that up. I'll hold off on that. The only reason why he lives in the movie is because Stephen King, apparently it was his one big book regret.
Oh, yeah.
That he was like, I wish we didn't kill Tad off. Tad dies of just straight up dehydration in the book.
Yeah.
And I just kind of read the blurb a little earlier of the books, like Wikipedia of how it ends.
Yeah.
And it's like, Tad already dead of dehydration. You know, the ending, like, fight kind of goes off similar, and then there's a fast forward and it's like she recovered from rabies, did her treatment, the marriage survived, and they're in counseling. You know, it's very like
because marriages often survive dead kids.
The number one, the and they mourn Tad together. Charity, now working in order to support herself, and Brett gives Brett a new vaccinated puppy. A postscript says the whole Cujo chased the rabbit into was never discovered. It also reminds the reader that Cujo was a good dog who always tried to keep his owners happy, but ravage of rabies drove him to violence.
And I think the movie establishes that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we're told Cujo is a good dog, and we're watching a sad circumstance. And apparently, and once again, this is pulled from like IMDb facts or whatever. Cujo's the only famous one, but from like the late 70s, early 80s, there was like a run of like rabbit dog movies, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Or like a few like here or there. Like, you know, it's at its core, it's scarier, you know, than any real monster, because it's like, oh, this is a thing in a different way can happen. I think.
Oh, sure.
I think the story, like, if you and I were to sit down and write something like killer dog gets rabies, Cujo, I think we, or at least I shouldn't say we, start something more normal. It's like family dog gets rabies, you know, family and kid are in danger, but it's their dog. So it's like an old Yeller situation.
Right, right. Where but it's like your beloved family dog is turned on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's like, I don't know if you read Old Yeller as a kid.
I did not know.
So we read Old Yeller at school, and then we had to watch the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and the big thing of that is like this great dog teaching life.
But he has to put him down.
But at the end of the movie, dog gets rabies, or book, dog gets rabies. Got to take him behind the shed and put him down. forget if the kid has to do it or not. Like,
oh yeah, kid does.
I think he does because, you know, you have to be a man and learn a lesson. Yep. And, you know,
he's my dog. It's my responsibility. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, if that movie was a, I think the movie or the story like hits like I think it's exponentially sadder and scarier. But at the same time, the movie, it's.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. You almost want, like, why don't you do it? Like, why don't you have Dee Wallace and Tad be the mom and son who are about to escape? Like, why you have them be the characters who are about to leave, and then they're trapped not by the husband, but now by Cujo, their family, their beloved family dog. Right? It seems like you're missing a beat there. Like,
that's what I think's missing there, right? For a horror story.
Yeah.
Or I guess just horror be story.
More resonant, maybe, like.
Or a scene may have been better to add in. I mean, this could be in the book for all I fucking know, is Dee Wallace and the kid go to the mechanic early on. Oh no, kid, that's not a monster, that's just Cujo. He's a sweet dog. Oh, hi Cujo.
They do kinda have that scene.
No, with the young kid with Tad.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, so you see, oh hi
Cujo. Well, no, Tad's like, there. Tad meets Cujo.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, they have that. They kind of have that scene.
Well, I sound stupid.
Think you were on to something. I like the idea of, like, it should have been, you know, we see the lady packing up. She's hiding it from her husband. She's trying, and, like, maybe he figures it out and is, like, chasing her. And that kind of, like, ruckus between her and him is what first sets Cujo off. And Cujo kills him. And and they're, like, watching. They're like, ah, and they run to the car. And then they're in the car, and they can't get it started. And now Cujo's, like, all amped up. And he comes right, and boom. And then you basically do the same thing. The same
movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The movie works. From there, you have the same movie. But it feels like, yeah, you could have left out. You already have a family drama going on in Cujo's house.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need all the stuff with Dee Wallace and a boyfriend.
We don't.
Like,
that
stuff is kind of weird. I've never really thought about it. But, yeah, it's very strange. Why did they do that?
That's my question, because Stephen King needs to have a broken marriage, a troubled marriage.
But the thing is, they have. I mean, like I said, the implication is there that the dad's
main character, like it, because it's one of those things where, like, by the end of the movie, right? So they're getting up. She fights the dog, fucking breaks in half, kills her with a baseball bat, and
stabs with the baseball bat. That doesn't kill him though, because he does Cujo Voorhees through a window. At the end. And then she shoots him, and I like that the husband didn't save her. I like that she saved herself.
She shoots him. But the husband comes, and he's there. And guess what? It's all good at the end of it. We get a nice freeze frame of him walking her out of that nice house with the kid, blah, blah, blah. They're hunky-dory. Where I hit, I think we could have wrote it a little better. I think it could be written a little better.
The only reason I can think of that it's done the way it is because they didn't want they wanted Dee Wallace to kind of be a little unsympathetic when the attack starts. I think is that part of it. That's the only reason I can think of to do it like that is to because, like, if it's a battered wife and then she has to deal with Cujo, it's like she's already a victim. It's like a hat on a hat, I guess, maybe.
Sure.
I agree with you. I like the way we put it together. I'm fine with that, but maybe that's because I'm basic and I'm not seeing
care. I mean, me too. In, I guess in its sense, self too, right? It's very much just a Jaws story. You know, it's in a way. It's, you know, she's Roy Scheider, mm-hmm. just, you know, kind of left to her own human verse nature machine, and at the end of the day, shoots her way out and comes on top.
Yeah. And like I said, I do like, it would have been, you know, you could have seen a scenario where they have the husband show up at the last minute and, like, she thought she killed Cujo, but he smashed through the window and husband shows up at the last minute and saves her. But, like, I like that they had her, you know, she saved herself.
That would have been lazy and, like...
Oh, yeah, that would have sucked.
Not worth... It would have been such a cheap payoff, too, because nothing's worse...
They would undo all the stuff they've done for making us... Like I said, they took her from unsympathetic to sympathetic with Cujo, so, like, yeah. You don't want to then steal that away from her at the last minute. You want to leave her with her, like, moment of glory.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because, again, nothing's worse in a movie like that when you have typically a female character who does all the legwork, does everything, and then the man, typically whether her husband or the cop, comes in and goes, I took care of it. You know, I know you did everything, and I just had to pull one gun, and we're good now. Movies do that. I'm blanking on the ones that do that, but the ones that do that, it's always like, gosh, like, I'm watching a movie. I kind of want that hero shot. Like,
yeah.
No pun intended. I want that hero shot and that satisfaction of the character. When you just it's like when those goddamn, it's a different rant. It's like when goddamn rom-coms of the, not even coms, those romantic dramedies of like the mid, like 2000s to like early teens, mm-hmm. all were like, actually, we're going to end up with the couple breaking up because it's the realistic way of the story. There was a string of them where there's and you're like, no, I want to see those two get together and be happy. Because that's why I came to see this movie. I'm not here to see their real bullshit drama.
Yeah, if I want to see somebody get broken up with, I'll just think back on the times that happened to me.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with heroes getting their kills in movies.
Yeah.
No, but it's good. Anything we really haven't mentioned or anything on Cujo?
I don't really think so. I think we've really hit everything.
It's a really tight movie.
You know, we love a good 90-minute banger. Yeah. You know,
it's really,
like I said, it's a perfect cable movie. It's a perfect, like, put it on. You know, it's the middle of the afternoon on Sunday. You put on Cujo. You accidentally doze off through the first half hour, but then you have 40 minutes, and then you wake up just in time to see the ship break off, and it's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying the first half is bad, but I just know the type of movie this is. It's just it's just the way it works.
Oh, it's a very much a 80s melodrama. Like, there's some filmmaking.
Well, those character moments exist to make you invest you in Dee Wallace and her husband, and they work. I mean, they work, you know?
Absolutely.
Even the little subtle bit that, like, the kid clearly prefers his dad, you know what I mean? Spice. Even that is laid in there before they ever get to the car. His mom, you know?
His mom is a two-time in whore. Do you like that? And that Stephen King changed his end, wanted the ending change for the movie with Tad living.
I think it's fine. I think it makes more sense if they're planning on if in his mind they stay together. It makes more sense that Tad survived. I think if Tad dies, there's no way they get back together.
No, but even I think it's too much. I think it'd be too much for the movie to be like, for the type of movie it is, to be like, dead kid in the car. Now I got to put a baseball bat through this dog and then shoot him.
Yeah.
It's like a little, it's a little too much of two things that are hard to do in movies to begin with. Dead dogs and dead kids.
Didn't go that dark. You know what I mean? That wasn't like a common thing for a movie to be like, oh yeah, we're doing dead kid. Like,
and dead dogs. I mean, those are two very like, those are two no-nos in movies, right?
We just both watched When Evil Lurks, right? There's a great dog scene in that movie.
The worst part about that movie, the movie's great, but I mean, you know that
it's a rough watch though. It's not one I would recommend to just anybody.
It's coming too, the way the camera's shooting, or not like coming, but I'm like, ooh, something's going to happen.
They set it up.
Dog.
Yeah, like they definitely set it up.
Like
the way that you're right. It's like the way the shots start bringing the dog into your field of view, and they're just subtly letting you know that shit's about to break off.
You just know something's coming, right? It's like I don't know if you tense up when you watch typically dramas or anything when characters are driving and they only focus on a close-up
when they
of
do
their
that
face.
Shot because you know they're about to do the crash
or something. So and I'm like, you're like, oh,
it's the same way you feel about mirror shots even in movies that are not going to have a mirror jump scare. Well, I was just watching something, just a normal movie, like it wasn't a horror movie, wasn't a thriller, was not going to have a jump scare, but like they did the framing of the shot of the person in the bathroom mirror and then opening it and then closing it. And I was like, I was still like, there's going to be something behind it.
Yeah. You're like, I know it. I just know it. But yeah, that shit's gonna happen. Like, that's happening. So I stand on movie Kid Alive works, because yeah, especially, I mean, like, fine. Not too long ago, you and I watched The Mist, and I was like, I think I would have yelled at, like, oh, come on, fuck on, Stephen King. You got, like, one move now?
Yeah, that one works. That one
that works. Works. You can't, I can't see that going any other way. Yeah, but man, Cujo, I'm happy to watch it.
I was gonna say, what would you say of your first watch? Would you recommend it to people?
I definitely would recommend it. I think I would recommend it more in the vein that you've kind of put it to, of like, hey, it's a good cable watch. Like, yeah. I think I'm gonna be like, you know, I think it'd be a good summer watch too. Like, nice hot day.
It's a hot movie. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Like, if you're looking for like some horror like that, where you're like, all right. It is a heavy movie. That was my big thing, just because of its subject matter. Like, I'm sure. Like, I could ignore, I could laugh about the family drama part of it, just because, like, I'm fucked up. But
even that, for the most part, is all played pretty straight. It's pretty, played there's straight. There's not a lot of levity in the movie. It's pretty humorless. Dour. Yeah, it's pretty humorless.
But I definitely would recommend it. I liked it. I own it, you know, that, like I said, the summer watch. I don't know when I'll watch it again, put it that way.
I'm sweaty. Not it's a sweaty movie.
And it's also something like, don't remake it. We're good.
No, they don't need to remake this at all.
You know, in their Wikipedia, it's like, there were talks in 2018, but nothing ever came. And it's like, that's a good thing, because you're not going to get another D. Wallace performance. You know whoever's remaking is killing that kid in that car.
If you want to remake a crazy dog movie, remake Man's Best Friend. Okay. Are you familiar?
I'm not.
Ally Sheedy, Lance Henriksen. It's a movie about a genetically engineered dog that escapes. That's like a killer weapon dog that escapes.
And on Tubi.
Escapes from a lab, and Ally Sheedy like takes it in. She's a journalist. I just rewatched it pretty recently. It was a cable staple for me when I was a teen, and I just rewatched it, and it's pretty good schlock. I'm honestly kind of surprised. How did this get made? Hasn't gotten around to it.
Because schlock. I see that the poster is familiar to me. Like,
You also familiar. Might recommend a scene or recognize a scene from the. It's in the movie Friday when he's watching the mailman get attacked by the dog. That's the movie he's watching. His Man's Best Friend.
That's a good pull. Oh, you just brought it. I found one. That's a good. I said that's a good fun fact. I found one good fun fact on my own. This is like new research. The voice of Cujo, so the human who did like the audio work, also later on as a voice actor, did some Scooby Doo voiceovers.
You know, it's not from, Frank Welker, is it?
Is it? I didn't write the name down, but I could check real quick.
I don't know. I just know Frank Welker is a guy who's like famous for doing dog and cat sounds in cartoons and stuff for like years and years and years. I think he was also the voice of Megatron, original voice of Megatron, maybe. You're
probably right. And if you are, you get nothing.
I get a special nerd badge for being the biggest fucking nerd.
It's a deep. It is Frank Welker.
Damn, son, come on.
So you win. It wasn't even my fun fact. You're like, no, this guy's known for doing dogs.
I'm one-upping your fun fact.
So I was like, wow, I'm that's
story topping your fun fact.
No, it's fun. Yeah, no, he's straight up did. Like that's his fourth.
One of his big specialties is he would do the sound of a dog and a cat fighting. And, like, he would do both, all the noise, and, like, it would sound like he would do, like, simultaneous noises and stuff. That was one of his big, specialties.
Makes sense. So, like, the Lion King, it says lion roars, mouse, you know, additional voice. So, Tommy Boy, voice of the deer. I should have read this a little more than...
That's why I'm here. That's why we make such a good team.
So, he was like, oh, that's fun. This guy did the Scooby-Doo movie. Yeah.
And he's just like animal voice guy across the board.
And then I saw Scoob 2000, 2020, and I was like, oh, good, good for good for you, but you fucking, you knew Frank Welker. I mean, it isn't Frank Welker, is it? Yeah, it is. Oh, that's good. That's good stuff.
It's just King nerd shit, baby. I'm on it.
Also, he must have just been doing the voice of Scooby-Doo, by the way, like barks or something, because he's not the roar Shaggy.
No, he probably did dog noises.
Yeah, so that's not fun. All right, well.
Hey, that was a great little bit to end on, though. I think we did a great job. This is a good episode.
It was very good, very solid. Everyone, we will return.
We have no idea what we're going to do.
No, we have nothing.
We haven't talked about it. We haven't thought about it.
No, we'll talk. We'll talk in a minute.
I think, in honor of you, we should find a good haunted house movie.
Ooh, you know why we shouldn't do that? The man died in the house.
Oh, a guy died in my house, too.
Yeah, but I don't want to move in with that. Like, the night... Like, if you listen to my Conjuring episode, like, the day before I moved into my old senior year college apartment, I went to the theaters to go see The Conjuring. Very intense experience. Like, the movie really got to me. Go to move in. I'm the first one there out of five roommates, alone. It was just beat up, old shit. It was just one long hallway with, like, wood panels and rooms and freak, you know. So, to be quite honest, and call me a wimp, let's
steer away from that.
Yeah, maybe we can watch, like, a comedy of a haunted house, like a bad one or something, but...
No, we're watching Poltergeist.
Oh, actually, I could do that, because I'm moving in to a not a, like, developmental home.
See?
You know, I think if I was moving into we have done Poltergeist on the show.
I was going to say, and also, like, it would just force me to reveal the fact that I don't like Poltergeist.
Oh, I love Poltergeist. I covered that. No, we own plenty of haunted house movies, plenty of them. We're not going to do one.
We're not going to do one.
Amityville.
Ooh, I love Amityville. One of my faves. All right, buddy. It's been great. Let's get out of here.
All right. Stay frightful. Bye.
Stay frightful. Watch out for your dogs. Spay and neuter them.
Yes. Thank you, Bob Barker.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.